The Afternoon Live Podcast with Anthony Martin. Listen in live on Hospedia Channel 1. Online at coastway.org.uk. Or on the TuneIn app Wednesdays from 1 on Coastway Hospital Radio for Brighton.
It's that time of the month again where we have a look at some of the best books that are available to purchase at the moment. And with me to do that, it is Holly Fitzgerald from the Kemptown Bookshop. Hello, Holly.
Hi.
Right, so this month we have, how many books do we have to review?
We have 4 adult books and 1 young adult book, so 5 in total.
Okay, so let's get cracking with that. The first book is from Ali Smith, who some of our listeners might remember was the guest director of Brighton Festival in 2015. The book is called The Public Library, and it's a collection of short stories, I believe.
It is. It's short stories interspersed with bits written by authors and librarians and historians about libraries. So there's kind of like a bit of fact, a bit of fiction.
So she wrote this, or she kind of put this piece together. Was it last year then? It was.
I think it's been being put together for a couple of years. I think it's okay. Being worked on with the hope to come out at the end of last year. And it's basically just, I guess, a cry out against the cuts to public spending, which are affecting things like libraries. And so she's taken public library as her title and kind of as the central focus. So each contribution made by another author or another writer is specifically about their relationship to libraries growing up and the history of libraries and also what they mean to the public. But then each story, rather than being focused on a library, is focused on learning and accruing knowledge. It's quite a profound, lovely book.
Okay, and is this book UK-based primarily or US-based?
It's all UK-based.
Oh, just UK.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Ali Smith is a Scottish writer.
Okay.
Most of her stuff is usually in the UK.
Right, okay. So it's quite kind of pertinent then, seeing as...
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah, and you really... The thing that really struck me after reading it, and actually after almost every story, as I was left with the feeling that I wanted to know more, not necessarily about the characters, but I wanted to go out and learn things.
Okay.
And then that immediately makes you think about going to a library. And it works. It does that really quite wonderfully.
And do you know, is this book available from the local library here in Brighton?
I don't know. I should have checked that out.
We should have researched it. So that's available at the moment. And how big is the book then? How long would it take to read it?
Depends how quick you are reading. Didn't okay. take me very long. The short stories are not very long at all, really. I mean, they're not flash fiction, not 500 words. They're much longer than that. But the nice thing about a short story collection is you can dip in and out. It doesn't. Mm. You don't have to read it all in one go.
Yeah, and I suppose it's something you can go back to as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, very good. Now, the second book is called Beetle Bone, and it's written by the Irish author Kevin Barry. And it features John Lennon as a central character. Tell me about this. This sounds good.
Yeah, it's a fictionalisation of John Lennon's time on an island off the coast of Ireland and his need to get away there and spend some time on his own. So John Lennon is the main character.
Now, you've said kind of to me before that John Lennon actually bought this island in real life. So it's actually kind of semi-true story.
Yeah. No, it's based on real accounts of what happened and why he went away. He goes away to find meaning and the kind of meaning that he's not found in success or he's not found in fatherhood or the things that he thought he would find. And he did that in real life. He bought a little island for just over £1,000 and went there away. And he bought it quite early on. He bought it when he was with his first wife and then went there with her once. And then when he married Yoko Ono, they went there together quite a few times. But this one, he specifically went on his own.
Okay. And so this story, is it based on some kind of research? Has Kevin Barry done some research?
Yeah, there's a lot of research in it. In fact, actually, about... Some way into the book, Kevin Barry himself becomes a character, which sounds a bit confusing and potentially a bit pretentious, but actually it works really well because in doing that, he talks about his experience. He goes to the island on kind of a pilgrimage and he talks about his experiences of the island and the fictional John Lennon's experience of the island. And the two almost combine at one point where you're kind of a bit like you're distanced more than you were from John Lennon in the beginning, and more maybe from the idea of what you have of him. But then also Kevin Barry, the author, whose authors are often seen as kind of like ever present but not really their thing.
Yeah,
he's there in front of you as a real character, as a real person. I guess it's kind of halfway between a novel and memoir.
Okay, so apart from Kevin Barry and John Lennon, is there any other characters
in
the book?
Yes, yeah, there were other characters. Okay. In particular, there's one a fixer called Cornelius who lives on the island and is there to help John Lennon if he needs anything, like fix things and sort bits and pieces out for him, except he's totally useless.
Okay.
But in the best way.
Yeah. He's an admirable rogue, is he?
Yes. Lovable rogue.
Sounds like an islander off the coast of Ireland, I can tell you that. So John Lennon, he goes to the island just off of County Mayo, it says here, seeking refuge and quietness. It sounds a bit familiar, hashtag Star Wars, but the book itself, was this released at the end of last year again or this year?
That was released towards the end of last year, yeah.
Okay. Right, very good. Now, the third book we're looking at today is The Dead Ladies Project, and it's written by Jessa Crispin. Now, it's a memoir, I believe.
It is. Memoir stroke literary criticism, I would say. She decides to go travelling in an effort to save herself, kind of in a similar way that John Lennon goes to the island. She goes travelling round Europe, leaving everything that she had in Chicago, selling it and giving it away, giving up her life there, and goes travelling around Europe to not find herself, but just to work out how to live. She's not a happy person and has had pretty rough time. Although you never quite find out what's happened, but she alludes to it.
Okay.
And in each city or country that she stops in, she explores the city through a writer. So in Berlin, she talks about William James, who's a philosopher. In Sarajevo, she talks about Rebecca West, who went to that area during the end of the Second World War, I believe, and wrote an absolutely ginormous book about it. And she talks about this book called Black Lamb, I think. I should have checked that out before I came on. And she talks about Jean Rhys in London and Maud Gonne in Ireland. It's a fascinating book, but the thing that she does really, really well is kind of covers a range of topics. So she doesn't just talk about literature, obviously, and she doesn't just talk about her life. She kind of uses them to work out how to deal with things. So in the Balkan region in particular, it's actually quite moving but very interesting. She's trying to use Rebecca West and Rebecca West's experiences along with her own experiences and the cities that she's visiting to work out how you live in a place that's built on bloodshed. So she's experiencing all this kind of like difficulty with knowing how to be there. Like how do you go to a place where you know there's been so much trouble and fairly recently and so many problems and enjoy being there as a tourist? And then she has this realization that actually everywhere is built on bloodshed. And how do we deal with that as citizens?
Well, I suppose that's kind of a bit of a quandary for American tourists in general, though, isn't it? Because especially if they go to Europe, there's hundreds of years of history, isn't it? And whereas in America, probably less so. So that's something that's very conscious in the book, then, is it? That kind of disparity.
Yeah, you noticed it throughout. And I think she's done well to not make it a very melancholic book. I think it could have happened. There are real moments of humour in it. The constant idea is that you have to challenge the narratives that you're given, whether that's actually in a book or whether it's by the media. She talks about the media quite a lot, or politicians. It's a really fascinating read. I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it and highly recommend it.
So it covers a lot of topics then, from the sounds of it.
Yes, yeah.
Now, in the book, is she? You mentioned that she kind of looks at these cities through the eyes of a literary kind of hero, I guess. Is she an author in the book herself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's a writer. She actually writes for a literary blog. She's set up two literary magazines of her own. and I think they're now both blogs online. I'm not sure if they're ever they've ever been in print. So she's a well-known literary critic already, and she's writing about it with that in mind, but also just as a reader.
So is this actually a true story then? Again,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the troubles that she's left behind. This is kind of real
everything
life
about
situation.
It's real. Well. The book opens with her sitting in her kitchen trying to persuade two police officers not to take her away to hospital because she told her friend on the phone just the morning before that she was feeling suicidal. Not in a jokey way. She was genuinely feeling very, very, very low and turned off her phone for some peace and quiet, which did not go well for her because then her friend called her sister and her sister rightly freaked out when she couldn't get through to her, and so she got the police to go around, and she manages to persuade the police to go and that she's fine, but really she knows she isn't fine, and that acts as the catalyst for her making these changes. She realizes that, and to put it bluntly, it's either that she does end up killing herself or she makes a massive change in her life, and that's a massive change she decides to make.
Okay, so it's a deeply personal book then.
Yes, deeply, yeah.
Now, the fourth book is If the Oceans Were Ink, An Unlikely Friendship and Journey into the Heart of the Quran by Carla Power. Now, this sounds interesting. This is about the author deciding to read and learn about the Quran. Tell me more. Is this kind of like a non-fiction book then?
Yes, definitely. It's kind of a mix between memoir and cultural and social commentary, I guess. And religion, to some extent, too. Carla Power decides that she, as a journalist who writes quite a lot about Islam and Islamic cultures, needs to read the Quran to better understand them. And so enlists the help of her friend Akram, who is an imam and a scholar, to teach her about it.
Yeah, now see, this is something, I don't know if you've ever had the urge to kind of learn more about the Quran, but it's something that, something I've been interested in kind of doing, because we hear so much about Islam and what it is and what it means, what the Quran is and what it means, and, you know, how kind of bad it is. Is that kind of the urge that Power has in this book, and do we learn anything about the Quran from reading this book?
I think the urge for Power is very much just learning it so that she knows more as a journalist. But also as a friend, I guess, in a way, her and Akram are very close, and she wants to know more about his culture. I have had that urge, and definitely with all the religions, I would like to know more about them. But it's a lot of work. If you want to know them properly, then you have to do a lot of work, as Power shows. And you do learn a lot about the Quran. Okay. I think the thing that you learn the most is that it is hugely adaptable. We're fed this idea that Islam is a very rigid religion. And actually, it's extremely flexible. And I actually spoke to Power about this. And she said that she thinks it's one of the reasons it gets into trouble, because it can be interpreted by anyone who reads it. It can, as most things can. But if you have an imam who agrees with you, then your opinion is validated and you can act upon it. That means that there are some incredibly liberal Muslims. That means there are some not so liberal Muslims. But it's a much more flexible religion than we are led to taught. And it's also changing with the times. So, for instance, her friend Akram, who teaches her about the Quran, has written a collection of books about ancient female Islamic scholars, which you don't get now. So that's something that is way back in history that they used to have, and he talks about how the Islamic culture has changed to stop women from having these rights, and he is very much for them having rights. And there's one instance in particular where he's talking about child brides, and it's a very different context to the one that we live in. I mean, child brides here now would not even be contemplated.
Yeah.
But in some Islamic majority countries, they are.
Mm.
And he is giving this lecture and he doesn't really question it. And Carlo is sitting in the audience just thinking, this is wrong, this is weird, with two of his female students. And they pull him up on it outside of this lecture. And they say to him that we think you need to address this. We think you need to be thinking about this differently. And he goes away and he does. And he comes back and they talk about it again. He goes away and thinks about it again. The next lecture he gives, he's changed his mind completely. And he believes that the Quran has to evolve with the times. So what he doesn't believe is that you have to change. You have to try and make people understand it. He says, you know what you know. You can't change someone's mind that way, but he's open to questions, and the book is quite fantastic.
I suppose you say about kind of the meaning of the Quran can be interpreted depending on what kind of maybe beliefs you have yourself, and it can be interpreted and manipulated in a lot of different ways. You could say the same about, we'll say, the Bible, for example.
Absolutely.
There's certain things in that, you know, looking at it now in this day and age, in 2016, you kind of go, really? They did that?
Yeah.
does Power address that in the book? Does she compare religions, or is this exclusively just on the Quran?
This is about the Quran. Okay. She doesn't talk about other religions so much, but she leaves space for the audience to do it. And you're very much aware, as an engaged reader, that actually, we are basically a Christian country, because our laws are founded in Christianity. And we don't question that. Which seems odd.
Yeah.
Given that we're so up for questioning other cultures.
Well, I think this is kind of the debate of our time, really, isn't it? With regards to this book, then, how easy of a read is it?
You would think that it is horrible and terrible and impossible. And I had to review this for Viva Magazine. And I left it on my desk for days and days. It came in the post and I couldn't bring myself to pick it up. I was terrified of it. And it got to a couple of days before the interview, and I was like, I'm going to have to read this book. Oh my God, I've got to read it. Picked it up, and I couldn't believe it. It's so easy to read. The way she writes is so open and personable and intelligent and exciting that you just want to read more.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
So it's quite a good skill that she has there then to
engage
quite a kind of, I suppose, a strange topic. Or not a strange topic, but a complex topic.
Yeah, well, she's a journalist, so she has to know how to write to a wide audience. And she manages that very, very well.
Okay, now our final book that we're going to look at today is a young adult book, and it's called Panther, by the author David Owen. It's about a 12-year-old boy whose life is falling apart around him. He does not enjoy being part of it. Why is that?
Well, his sister has just had a diagnosis of depression, and in his house, everything is very sad. His parents are very sad. His sister is very sad. It's a quiet but very tense atmosphere. And then outside of home, he's being horrendously bullied for being overweight. So he is not having a nice time.
He's having an awkward kind of preteen kind of time in his life.
Yeah.
So in this book, then, something comes along to distract him from that. What is it?
Well, he finds out a panther has been set loose in the suburb of South London in which he lives. And he decides that he's going to find the panther because he feels that if he finds it, everything will be okay. His sister will stop crying. His parents will stop arguing. Bullies will stop bullying him because he will be seen as strong and intelligent. And it's actually very moving. It's quite a sad, sad book, but really important because it's looking at teenage depression, and not just the way it affects the person with depression, but the way it affects their whole environment and all the people around them.
Okay, so is this kind of like a adventure, kind of fantasy type kind of
No, it's definitely more kind of just about a boy.
Okay. It's told from his point of view, is it?
It focuses on him more than anyone else.
Okay, and that book then, that's available to purchase now.
Yes, that came out, I believe it came out actually mid last year.
Okay, and the rest of the books as well that we've reviewed today, they're all available to purchase at the moment from Kemptown Bookshop.
They are indeed.
Which is just on St. James's Street, right, very, very close to the hospital here in Brighton. Holly, thanks very much again.
Pleasure.
For doing a book review this month. If you've just tuned in, you can catch this on podcast. If you go to iTunes, SoundCloud, Audioboom, all of those regular places that you can get podcasts, you will find it there. You'll also find it on your internet radio, which I just found out yesterday. If you go to podcasts on your internet radio, we are, I think, the fourth one down from the top. So you can listen back to this. You can tell your friends if you like books, enjoy books. We'll have another one for you again next month.